You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the disaster edition of the Pronk Pop Show. I'm your host, Raymond Thomas Pronk. Today I'm going to focus on two potential, actually one of them isn't a potential, it's a real disaster, and that's the eruption of the Ontake volcano, the stratovolcano in Japan. Japan is a series of islands that consists largely of the remains of volcanoes, and they have 110 volcanoes that are active. And last Saturday, one of them blew, Ontake. It has already killed at least 48 people. The death toll probably will go a little bit higher. There were several hundred people hiking in the area, because it's a scenic attraction. There are lodges, there are buildings near the summit. And for those that are new to the show, I have a lot of pictures and charts because I want to get into the various types of volcanoes so you understand a little bit, put it in context. But you listen to the show by going to pronkpops.wordpress.com. It's the companion blog to this show that has my notes, and that includes both charts, articles, YouTube videos, photographs, diagrams, depending on what the story is that I'm covering. And I have a lot of information just on the Ontake story. And I initially was going to do that second, but I'm going to do that first because there are a number of points that relate to the second disaster that I'm going to be covering, and that is Dallas, Texas, where I'm located, is now ground zero for the first case of Ebola virus in the United States, which is very deadly. It takes usually anywhere from 2 to 3 days to up to 3 weeks of what's called incubation period before you get the full-blown symptoms. And I'm going to get into that because a hospital that I used to live near, I've moved at least once since then. I was probably a mile and a half from this hospital, and it's a huge hospital. It has many, many buildings. It has literally thousands of people working there, thousands of people coming every day to see their doctor, and hundreds, if not thousands, of patients. It's a huge medical facility. It's really many, many buildings. And what caught my eye yesterday, I went into the newsroom. I don't have a television at home. I don't watch television at home. I find it's a waste of time. I usually do reading at home. I don't have a computer at home. But when I come on campus, I can go to the newsroom. And yesterday afternoon, and this is just after I got off the air, there was a breaking story that the United States government, namely the Centers for Disease Control, CDC, announced the first case, confirmed case, of an individual having Ebola in the United States. Remember, that is historic. There has never been one case. Yes, there were several people that came back from West Africa that had symptoms of it, but it wasn't confirmed that they had it. This was the first confirmed case. They had blood. They went through the protocol and confirmed that the virus is in the blood. And that person is in Presbyterian Hospital. I don't know what building. They're probably not releasing that information. But this person had returned from Liberia. And I thought, and I still really haven't had time to check this out, that many of the airlines especially not only United States, but European, had stopped going to the countries where, and the three major countries in West Africa are Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. And you also had several other cases in Nigeria, which is a major, very rich in terms of resources, large population. So it was spreading. So that's the second story I'm going to be touching. I'm going to first go over the volcano situation so it illustrates some points that I want to make, and then I'll spend the rest of the show on the Ebola outbreak, because they're breaking news as I speak on that as well. And there's some serious, they're both serious situations, but they're both disasters, they're both tragedies. Now, right now, the immediate tragedy, and it is a tragedy, probably over 50 people will have lost their lives in Japan because of that volcano exploding. And many of you probably are not knowledgeable about volcanoes. And I'm not going to give a lecture in physical geology. I could, but I'm not going to do that. You need to understand there are various types of volcanoes. Some really are not a problem. They're all dangerous, I should say this. But there's degrees of danger. Probably if you're a U.S. citizen or a Japanese citizen that have gone to Hawaii, Hawaii, like Japan, the land masses were created, the islands were created over many millions of years over what's called a hotspot. And a hotspot, like it indicates, it's very deep, it doesn't move. And you have magma going up a conduit or a pipe and spewing lava. But what happens is you have a plate, and I'm going to get a little bit into plate tectonics. The plate is moving slowly, usually in the neighborhood of 5 to 10 centimeters a year, a couple of inches. But when you're talking millions of years, what happens is the plate is moving westerly over this hot spot, and over time, the islands move west, west-northwest direction, and were formed. And you have an active volcano. Yeah, actually, you have on the main island, Hawaii, you have five volcanoes. One of them is very active. But here's the difference between that volcano and the one in Japan. The lava, let me back up. You have what's called magma, and that is molten rock. It's very, very hot. However, if it breaks through the surface of the Earth's crust, it's called lava. And what happens is this lava, and you've seen pictures of it, and it's an ongoing process. It does destroy buildings, but it's something you could literally walk, if not run, from as it approaches, because it's not flowing at rapid rates. It can, depending on where it's coming from. The important point to understand is what the composition is of that molten rock. If it largely consists of iron and magnesium, which the lava in Hawaii does, it flows, has a low viscosity. And the reason it has a low viscosity is two points. The temperature is very, very hot, like 1200 to 1350 degrees centigrade, especially as it's going up the vent, but also because of what the actual chemical composition is, and that is it's silica. All of the volcanoes are spewing silica, but this has a relatively low percentage, and it's still typically about 40 to 50% silica. But it also has magnesium, iron, and calcium, which enables it to flow. That's the key thing. It can flow, and it doesn't have gas. It has some gas, but very little. Either 0 or 1%, and the gas is water vapor, largely water vapor and carbon dioxide, but it can also have sulfur dioxide. So in Hawaii, you can go and watch lava flow, and it goes into the ocean. It goes in it's the southern portion. It goes into the ocean, and it goes sort of like over a cliff. The water hits it, quenches it, and it becomes rock, very fine grain rock, and the rock is basaltic. And it's important to understand. I've probably given you more information than you want to know. But the point is this. Depending on the composition of the magma, the temperature of the magma, it either flows or it doesn't flow very well. So when you're dealing with volcanoes and lava flows in Hawaii, they tend to be slow moving. They're flowing, but they're slow moving, and you don't see the explosive eruptions like, for example, you saw in Mount blew up in 1980. In May 18th of 1980, it blew up, killing again. I think it was 67 people. I might be a little bit off, but it was a killer. But that's a different type of volcano. It's not over a hot spot. Those volcanoes are where the plates are colliding. In other words, you have the North American plate, and it includes also a part of the ocean. Don't think of it as just North America, the landmass. It includes a lot of ocean on the East Coast, some ocean on the West Coast. But it's colliding with another plate, and it's usually a oceanic plate. And that, what happens is it goes under the North American plate. And as a result of going under, magma comes out. In other words, molten rock that normally is solid, melts, or what's called a partial melt, and sends magma up into the plate that it's going under. And that's the North American plate. And what you have on the west coast of the United States is the Cascade Range, but you have a number of volcanoes from California, Oregon, Washington, going into Canada and Alaska. And those are what's called composite volcanoes or stratovolcanoes. They're the same thing. And those are what most people think of as a volcano. They look like a mountain with a peak. Those are the dangerous kinds. Why are they dangerous? First of all, the magma, you have a magma chamber under these mountains or volcanoes, has a different composition than the one you have in the hotspot over Hawaii. It is more felsic. In other words, it has potassium feldspar. That's the fel, and the sic is more silicon. It typically has over 60%, 60 to 70% or even higher of silica. And silica prevents the flow of the magma. It doesn't flow well because it has a very high viscosity. And viscosity means it resists flowing. The way to think of it, a low viscosity is like water. It flows. And also like the lava in Hawaii, it flows. It has low viscosity. It depends what makes it. What's its composition, how quick it's going to flow. Well, the viscosity of the magma, as well as the lava coming out of these volcanoes, is very, very high. And it has a different composition. It's much higher in silica, and it also has a different composition. It has primarily quartz, as well as potassium feldspar, and other minerals, but those are the major ones. And it also has more gas. It has, again, the gas, these volatiles are primarily water. Usually about 70% is water vapor, hot water in gas form, as well as carbon dioxide and sulfur dioxide. So the Hawaii volcanoes, where you get the lava flows, very different composition, very low in terms of gas content. However, the volcanoes both in Japan and along our west coast have more gas in them, usually 4 to 6%, and that makes a deadly combination, because it's under a high degree of temperature, a high degree of pressure. But when the gas expands and escapes, finds a way through the crust, it's explosive. And two things happen. You can have lava flowing down the slopes of the volcanoes, but what makes, and that in itself is deadly, and I'll get back to that in a minute, but you also have an eruption of what's called pyroclastic material, and this is really deadly stuff, and the gases are exploding out. And if you see the videos on that some of the people on the mountain took that were right there, you see this rising explosion. It looks like a real dust storm going. It looks like a nuclear bomb went off. It is exploding because the gas is expanding, and it's shooting up ash, fine particles of ash. And those are deadly. Why? I just told you what it's made of. It's made of quartz, potassium feldspar. Quartz is used to make glass. It's glass. It's tiny, 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 tiny pieces of ash. And it's deadly. If you breathe it in, continually breathe it in, it'll kill you. What also will kill you is the sulfur dioxide, as well as the explosion and the material hitting you. It's a deadly combination. So if you don't die of the immediate explosion of this material, and you can see the pictures, this explosion goes up, and then depending on the prevailing winds, it could either move north, south, east, or west, depending on the prevailing winds. So you could be very lucky and not be downwind, but if you're upwind of where the prevailing winds are going, you're going to be covered in this ash. And it's an explosive force, and you can see these people trying to outrun it, but it's very hard to outrun. So it's the volatiles, and that's what they call them. It's the gas bubbles, and it's primarily water vapor, carbon dioxide, sulfur dioxide, and this pyroclastic material, fine particles of dust, ash, that are being blown out of the vent in the volcano, and it's deadly. You also have lava, potentially have lava flowing down, and what you got to keep in mind, many of these mountains have a lot of ice and snow on them, depending on the time of year. And because of this rapid release of heat, it's a deadly combination. You get what's called a lahar, a big flowing, this ash, when combined with the water and the snow and the ice, it becomes like a very flowing river of cement-like material. Like in Mount Rainier, it literally flooded a river for many, 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 many miles and killed many trees as well as people and wildlife. So that's a little bit background. I need to make one other point. Okay, you have the hotspot volcanoes. You have what's called a subduction volcano where the earth plate, usually an oceanic plate, is going under. And in one case, in the United States, it's going under the North American plate. But you also have an Asian plate, a Euro-Asian plate, and that's a continental plate. And then you have the Pacific plate that is going more or less in a northwesterly direction, and it goes under this Euro-Asian plate. And that's why you have all these volcanoes in Japan. Those volcanoes, just like we have on our west coast, we have the volcanoes and mountains that used to be volcanoes. In Japan, you have many, many volcanoes, and many of them are active. Doesn't mean they go off every day, week, month, or year, but when they do go off, and it's very hard to predict, I would say almost impossible. You got to understand that because they have so many volcanoes in Japan, they have sensors all over. The most active ones, about, I think, 46, 47 of the 110, they're really monitoring. They have sensors. I don't want to get into that, but they're trying to see if, for example, let's say you get what's called an uplift or a bulging. Well, that's an indication that this volcano might be going off. Now, the little I've been able to learn about the Ontake volcano explosion that we had Saturday, there was virtually no warning. There is no way, because supposedly what really caused the problem, you had a lot of water under the surface that was turned into explosive gas, and that's what triggered this upward explosion. So volcanoes can be very, very, very dangerous, but they're also very unpredictable, and there's virtually nothing man can do to stop this. The best advice is stay away from volcanoes, period. Yet most Americans, especially those on the West Coast, are near many volcanoes. Seattle, for example, is fairly close. I think it's about 60 miles from Mount Rainier. And a little further south was where St. Helena's was. And St. Helena's blew up in a northerly direction towards Mount Rainier and towards Seattle, but it was too far away. So if you live along the West Coast, in the next thousands or millions of years, those volcanoes will, some of them will erupt. And when they do, they can do a lot of damage. There's a lot of dangers. It's not just the immediate explosion, and that can be deadly. If you're on the summit, when that goes, in most cases, you're dead. The hikers in Japan, well, if you were at the summit, most of the bodies were at the summit or right below it. People obviously below it, and not in that you could see. You really need to look at the videos and go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com, and you can get a sense. And there should be a certain amount of panic. I would be panicked. I'd be running downhill as fast as I could. The problem is, you can't outrun it, because this explosion is not only going up, it is also, depending on the prevailing winds, going to blow to one side or the other of the volcano. And there was an excellent video, and it's a scary video, because it definitely reminded me of the St. Helena's volcano when it blew. Apparently, they had some cameras on another mountain that were looking in a direction of where the volcano on Taki blew up. And it not only was fast moving, it was very reminiscent of what happened in St. Helens. There's no way to outrun it. And if you happen to be in that area, in that direction that explosion was going, you're dead. There's not going to be many survivors. It's very much where you are in relation to the volcano, in what direction the volcano is erupting. And this is a composite or stratovolcano. It's large. It's the second largest in Japan after Mount Fuji. And this is the second deadliest. It's the deadliest after World War II, and its previous record was in 1926. But the Japanese, if you live in Japan, volcanoes are everywhere. You're living on the remains of a volcano. So the Japanese know a lot about it. The Americans don't. Now, obviously, if you're in Washington or Oregon where you have the Cascade Range, most of those are dormant, but they can wake up. So even though they might be dormant for hundreds of years, if they start erupting, especially if you have a cabin or live in a town not too far, I suggest you move. The way you adapt to a volcano is don't be there anywhere near it at all. Because if you're near it, you're running a risk, a calculated risk. Is the probability that you're going to die from a volcano low? Yes, it is. It's near zero. But you do have, they do blow up unexpectedly. And just for completeness, I'll briefly describe before, I'm looking at the clock, I don't have much time. There are two other types of volcanoes, and one you never see, and that's the most activity, volcanic activity, and those are along the Mid-Atlantic Ridge is a good example of what I'm talking, where you have these plates, where you have the North American plate moving westerly, and you have the European Asian plate moving easterly. They're diverging. You have a diverging plate, and at the bottom of the ocean where you have this divergence, you can see it. You can also see it in Iceland. This divergent plate runs through the Iceland area. They're spreading apart, and as they spread apart, you have you have lava flowing, and you have these magma chambers close to the surface of the bottom of the ocean, where the ocean crust is. So you have lava flows there, and you have what's called, they look like chimneys, black smokers spewing out this material. But you don't see these massive explosions. You have, similar to Hawaii, you have lava flows. And again, it flows because the lava is made up of not only silica, but a smaller percentage of silica, but largely because it has magnesium and iron in it. It has other minerals. So it's the combination of the composition, the type of magma that turns into lava when it reaches the surface, in this case at the bottom of the ocean on the oceanic crust. And that is the, here's what you need to understand. The most current or youngest part of the earth is along those ridges, because that's where you get the new formation of the ocean crust, and they're moving away from each another. And that's probably too much detail, but if you really want to see it, most of us can't go down in these small submarines that take pictures of this, but you can go to Iceland and see it on land, because parts of Iceland are going west, parts of Iceland are going east, and you have what's called a rift valley, and you have volcanic flows, and you also have volcanoes. And that's the point. And it's fairly safe, similar to Hawaii. You can look at it. So those are three types. You have a hot spot, you have the subduction type volcanoes. Now you have a fourth, and it's important, or can be, especially if you live in the Yellowstone area, where you have a caldera. Now a caldera, and the one in Yellowstone is what's called a super volcano. It's very, very large, and it's a lot of hot gases. That's where Old Faithful's located. But it's a collapsed. The reason you have the caldera, the crater has collapsed as the magma flew out, and it's over 640,000 years ago. But if that magma chamber ever grows again and ever erupts, we're in a world of hurts. And there's been a movie about this. It's on YouTube called The Super Volcano. It's a fairly good movie. It'll get your attention. And the point, reason I'm bringing that up, there's a scene in that, and this is where I'm going to connect. I'm not going to have time to do much of the Ebola. I'm going to give you about 1 minute of that. But there's an important scene where the expert, the geologist, is confronted by the Secretary of Homeland Security and the governor of a state that they don't want him to make a pub. The geologist knows that Yellowstone is the super volcano is about to erupt, and it's going to cover most of the United States with ash. And this ash is deadly. And millions of people are going to be killed, not tens, not thousands, millions, because of the explosion, some of them, but most of them because of the ash. Now, he goes out and makes a statement, well, it'll probably blow like St. Helena's. That should get your attention. The problem is you don't experience supervolcanoes erupting that often. But when they do, they're deadly. They change climate. They kill people. And it drops the temperatures all over the world and causes food shortages. It's deadly. So if the Yellowstone supervolcano should ever go off, the United States would be in a world of hurts. And it's hard, again, you almost can't predict it. So watch the movie. Now I'm going to relate it to something. Yesterday after the show was over, I went to the newsroom and was listening to the head, Frieden, the Dr. Frieden, that was head of the Center for Disease Control. Now, he doesn't want to panic people, and you should start panicking a little bit about what's happened with Ebola. Now, why do I say that? This case, you know, the United States, this is the first time we've had a case, a confirmed case in the United States, and it's in Dallas, Texas. That gentleman came from Liberia, probably flew to someplace in Africa, then to Europe, and flew into the United States. He didn't have any symptoms, and that's important. He didn't have any symptoms, so he was allowed onto the flight, came to Dallas. Now he's in critical condition. He has been in contact with at least anywhere from 12 to 18. Some of these are young children, at least five that we know of. And here's the problem. Now they're trying to say, unless you contact their blood, their body fluids, vomit, diarrhea, you have nothing to worry about. That's nonsense. Because if you're close to them, casual contact, let's say they sneeze, you could get it. And what they don't want to tell you and won't even mention, viruses mutate. To survive, they mutate. The greatest fear about this virus is if it goes airborne. And there have been some cases where it has gone airborne. You see, the previous cases of Ebola prior to the outbreak in West Africa, they were in very remote areas. And the deaths were hundreds. And one of the first groups that died were nurses and doctors, because they didn't know what they were dealing with. And they spread it. And now you have an outbreak in West Africa that's not killing hundreds, it's killing thousands. Estimates are it could go from anywhere from 70,000 to 270,000. They're running models on this. It is spreading. The way you deal with this is you contain it, you quarantine it, and you don't allow anybody that's been there to come into the United States. In other words, our government has failed us. 9-1-1 was an intelligence failure. This is a failure of the government to protect the American people. And you should be concerned because we only know of 18 people, but these 18 people also could spread it. And that's the danger. And this gentleman is critical. And this disease, the rate of death is between 50 and 90%. It's deadly, folks. You put people in quarantine. This is super dangerous. Now, right now, we only have one individual that we know of. But the medical authorities know how deadly this is. And it's not something not to be concerned about. A volcano will kill you rather quickly if you're in an unlucky spot. This can easily spread across the country. And I'm not buying the happy talk of the director of the Center Disease Control, or for that matter, the governor of Texas. I think you need to be clearly honest with the American people and tell them the truth. This is a deadly, deadly virus, and it can easily spread. I hope it doesn't, because I live in Dallas. I'm probably 5 miles away from that hospital. And the people that he contacted, I could have been contacted with and don't even know it. And you have an incubation period from about 2 to 3 days to 21 days when you have flu-like symptoms. And then you get the full-blown deadly symptoms. I got to close down the show, but I wanted to cover both disaster stories. I'll probably hit the Ebola with more information tomorrow. Thank you for listening. And now for America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.